All right, this is Gary Parrish again, and this is the Ion College Basketball Podcast again. I'm talking to you now on the morning of February 10th, otherwise known as the morning after Marcus Smart was officially suspended 3 games for shoving a fan at Texas Tech over the weekend. What a wild weekend. We got a lot to talk about today, and here to talk with me, of course, my colleagues from CBSSports.com, Jeff Brazello and Matt Norlander. Fellas, how are you on this Monday morning?
I'm terrific. I hope you're well also.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Good, man. It's, an eventful weekend. And, that Smart stuff is obviously huge in our world, but quickly got overshadowed by the Michael Sam news in college football. And, let's get into it.
Yeah, well, it's always something's going to overshadow something else. I mean, we live in a world where even something as wild as the Richard Sherman stuff only lasts about 2 days, you know, maybe 3. I mean, we're always going to move on to something, but certainly at least for a good 20 hours, Marcus Smart was not only the story in college basketball, but he was the story in sports. So late Saturday night, of course, in a game broadcast live by ESPNU, he committed a foul while trying to get a block at the rim in transition. Momentum carried him into the crowd. While he was on the ground, a Texas Tech fan named Jeff Orr apparently said something to him. What he said is still up for debate, I guess, and we'll get into that. Marcus Smart jumps up, shoves the man, is given a technical foul, not ejected, and then it becomes a sort of a social media and ESPN loop phenomenon. Norlander, I'll start with you. What did you make of this incident?
Yeah, I didn't even actually. I think I was just tracking like 4 things at once. So I initially missed the shove. I saw on my TV. I saw them teammates pushing Smart, you know, back, you know, when he was pointing toward Orr, and and then they showed the replay, and I was like, whoa. So I took a quick Vine. Never before has my Twitter feed, my at mentions, just been avalanched like that. It was immediate. Like, you just knew right then and there that it was going to be a massive, massive, massive story. I was surprised he wasn't ejected.
Should have been ejected. Like, that's not even debatable, is it?
Yeah,
I mean, should have been ejected.
Crazy,
the,
right?
The officials screwed that up.
Yeah, totally screwed that up in an era when so many other things are leading to officials to spend 5 minutes at the monitor at the end of games. This one didn't. And then even like the students rushed the floor and he's still on the court trying to make his case. It was really bizarre. As for the act itself, obviously you can't do that with a fan, but I'm much more bothered by the fan interaction in general. Earlier in the day, we had fans at the Oregon-Arizona State game actually spit on Oregon players and coaches. And because we didn't have video of that, that kind of got overshadowed to me. And Gary, you kind of touched on this in your column. The fans that do this are basically looking for action, and I don't think we still put enough onus on them. While certainly they get some flack in general, the athlete, because we know the athlete, we know the face, we know the name, they're the ones that get villainized. And when I put myself in Smart's situation, I can understand why he might have snapped, basically.
Porzello, what do you make of it?
Well, you've mentioned this before on the podcast and columns, whatever, and you know, fans, you know, they pay money to sit in the first row and they think that they can just curse and yell and insult whoever they want. And you know, Marcus Smart was literally maybe 6 inches from him, you know, a foot in front of him. And if somebody's saying stuff to your face like that, you know, it's hard, especially in the heat of the moment like that, not to react. You know, I he can't do that. But, you know, it's just really hard, you know, and obviously it's been frustration building for him for 3-4 weeks now, kicking the chair, the flopping, the losing. And I just think in the heat of the moment he got caught up. I think he, you know, the suspension was deserved. 3 games was fine. The fan not going to games the rest of the year, that's, you know, I agree with that too. But, you know, I think, you know, as Norlander mentioned, it's kind of it shows basically, you know, the fans getting more, I guess, aggressive with players just because they're sitting in the front row and they feel they have the right to do that. And, you know, I don't know where that stems from.
You know what? It's interesting to me, sort of the because everybody seemingly had an opinion about this. And I guess in this world of Twitter, everybody wants your opinion to be summarized in 140 characters and either, you know, and easily placed into some sort of a box where I thought the reaction here, a correct one, could be pretty nuanced. In other words, I understand, you know, why Marcus Smart might snap. I understand why if you were – let's just take it for what it is at this moment, and we'll get into the other stuff in a second. But let's just say he was called a piece of crap. When a complete stranger – while you're lying in front of him, is yelling at you and calling you a piece of crap, I can understand why, in the heat of the moment, emotions high, you might snap. And if you do, I don't think that makes you a bad person. I don't think Marcus Smart's a bad person. I wouldn't pretend to know him well, but I know him a little. I've been around him some, and I find him to be an incredibly thoughtful person, like a sharp guy. You know, at least from my vantage point, you know, a decent human being. So what happened on Saturday night doesn't make me think Marcus Smart is a bad guy or you know, any of that stuff. I get it, but also I don't. You can't do something like that without facing repercussions, and that's not just, you know, a relationship between a fan and a player. You can't do something like that in almost any walk of life without facing repercussions. Now, we've all been young and seen, you know, fights in bars and fights at parties, and I guess you can do it without repercussions there if nobody, you know, presses charges and it doesn't go that direction. But the point I try to make in the column is, like, the defense of "that person provoked me verbally" is never a mm-hmm. rationalization. It's never a legal rationalization for a physical confrontation. You know, every single time you turn on TMZ or click on TMZ and you see Sean Penn or Alec Baldwin or Kanye West in a confrontation, a physical confrontation with a member of the paparazzi, they are always provoked, always provoked verbally. You know, there's an incident, you know, within the past month of some guy getting beat up by Kanye West because he was responding after the guy called Kim Kardashian an in-lover, right? Now, I look at that incident and I go, okay, God, if somebody called the mother of my child a name like that, used a derogatory term toward her, and one that I guess could indirectly be a derogatory term toward me, you know what? I might throw a punch too, but it doesn't mean you won't face repercussions. So I think the immediate reaction on Saturday night, early Sunday, I was getting from a lot of people is, you know, Marcus Smart didn't do anything wrong. I think that's silly, or at least a little too simplified. Marcus Smart did something wrong. Now, you might think he was justified to do it. You might understand why he did it, but he still did something wrong, and that's why I felt comfortable, you know, within 10 minutes of the incident, saying he needs to be suspended. There are repercussions for actions like that, even if those actions are justified. Does that make sense?
I tweeted, I guess, yesterday morning, my, like, four thoughts. I mean, Marcus Smart crossed the line, deserved to be suspended. The fan crossed the line, deserved to be suspended. The fan probably deserved to be pushed. But fourth, Marcus Smart can't be the one doing it. And I just think that kind of just – that sums it up. You know, it's hard to argue with any of those, you know, points, I guess.
With I actually felt that, you know, this afterward, everyone kind of reacted appropriately for the most part. The 3-game suspension, this was really shocking to me. We didn't have anyone harshly disagreeing with that one way or the other, too light, too hard. Everyone kind of thought 3 games should be what it should be. Jeff Orr is not going to any more Texas Tech games for the rest of the season, which I think is honestly what should have happened. So from every standpoint, from the way Marcus Smart basically walked into that room and made his statement and made it well, and then Travis Ford made his statement and took questions, I feel like pretty much everyone responded to the incident as best they possibly could. And so that was at least nice to see. There's not too much additional fallout from this, I don't think. Now we obviously look toward, and Borzello had something on this on Sunday on the site, The fact that Oklahoma State's just been in a tailspin. And by the way, just as a quick aside, I think that also factors in, not that it's the excuse, but, you know, Smart comes back, Final Four hopeful team, talking about winning the Big 12 and ending that Kansas streak. Instead, you know, the Cowboys, they lose Cobbins, their big man for the year. You know, Stevie Clark's kicked off the team for his second arrest of 2014. And they're losing game after game after game. They're playing at Texas Tech. They're going to lose. It was an issue that was compounded, and I think that also played into it. But now as we go forward, they have three tough games here, and OSU's kind of got to get on the right track soon, or it's in genuine danger. I mean, it's in genuine danger of missing the tournament if it were to lose these next three games without Smart.
Let's talk about Jeff Orr for a second. He's the Texas Tech super fan, and subsequent to the incident with Marcus Smart, we start to see other videos of him describing his fandom, or even one of him, I don't know if the proper term is flipping off, but flipping off a Texas A&M player in recent years. I guess we could talk about him specifically, but I don't know that guy at all. Okay, but I do know this: that guy exists at pretty much every college basketball game. There's somebody just like him. Maybe taller, or shorter, skinnier, or heavier. Maybe black or white. But that guy exists at basically every college basketball arena. What do we make of a guy who, for lack of a better phrase, gets off on going to basketball games and yelling at 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds, not just boo or, hey, miss your free throw, but by his own admission, if we take him at his word, what he did on Saturday night is, while a young black man was lying in front of him, a basketball player was lying in front of him, he pointed at him and called him a piece of crap. In no other walk of life can I think of. And please, I've said this a few times over the past couple of days. If you guys can think of another walk of life where it's socially acceptable to do this, like, enlighten me so I'll stop, you know, incorrectly using that phrase. But at this moment, I can't think of another walk of life where it is mostly socially acceptable. Because trust me, like, if Marcus Smart doesn't shove the guy, nobody's going to say anything to Jeff Orr, you know, the other fans. Security's not going to come escort him out. He would have just had that moment, and then he would have left the game, and he would have been happy with himself. I can't think of any other place where it's socially acceptable for, and I don't necessarily mean it's a racial issue, because I don't think it necessarily is, but I think it compounds the issue and complicates the issue where you have. Because if you look at a college basketball game, like Kansas State played tonight, I want you to look at the court tonight, you know, and hit pause on your television. What you're going to see is a bunch of young black people on the court and a bunch of old white people around the court. That is the dynamic of a college basketball arena. That is the way it usually looks when you look at it. Black people on the court and white people around the court in the big money seats. And so I don't know where it is. It is socially acceptable. Where else it's socially acceptable? For the most part, for an older white person to yell at a young black person who is lying on the ground that he is a, quote, piece of crap. What do we make of this? How did we get here, and how did we get to the point to where this is, for the most part, considered okay, or at the very least allowed?
It's a situation where the fan has this odd feeling of entitlement given the ticket. And by the way, there is no other. I mean, a Comedy Central roast is pretty much the only other place you can call someone a piece of crap.
And Jeff Orr, I don't know that guy at all. I guarantee you there is no other. I don't want to guarantee you. I can't speak. Like, this buffoon could have done anything, I suppose. But my guess is that there's no other place where he's ever yelled at a black person, young black person, you're a piece of crap. I bet you he didn't do that at the bar the night before. I bet he didn't do it at the mall last week. I bet he didn't do it wherever it is he works ever. Why when a fan, not just him, but this happens a lot of different places. In fact, I would suggest almost everywhere. It has at least happened to some degree. I've been to a lot of basketball arenas. I hear a lot of stuff. What makes somebody think you can do that?
I think there's part of it is I feel with a lot of it is there's this, I don't know if tension's the right word, but you have fans that come in and they pay for the ticket, and from their perspective, they should be able to, and I'm obviously not right, but I'm just saying, from their lens, from their perspective, they feel that they have the right to combat the talented, younger, more athletic, you know, in many cases, you know, physically more attractive player, because you know what, that's the only thing they have over that player. And so what we have is an inherently passive aggressive, bordering on aggressive, changing to aggressive dynamic between player and spectator. And unfortunately, when you mix that with, and obviously in this case, you know, college arenas mostly don't sell alcohol, but when you can mix that with alcohol, and Gary, you've seen so many programs, that's going to be an inevitable clash that will happen. It doesn't happen 99.9% of the time, but the point when it does, obviously it manifests itself into something ugly.
Porcello, what do you make of that? Why is it that, you know, again, I don't think this is exclusive to Jeff Orr. He's the guy we're talking about today because a player actually responded to him in a physical way.
It happens in all sports.
It happens everywhere. Now, the difference in all sports is, you know, Porcello, you go to Giants games, right? Well, you can yell at Eli Manning or whoever happens to be playing against Eli Manning. I know as a Giants fan this year, you're probably yelling at Eli Manning more than you were actually yelling at the opposing players. But you know, there's quite a bit of distance between you and Eli Manning, and there's barriers between you and Eli Manning. In other words, the idea that, I mean, you know, outside of the Lambeau leap, you know, fans and football players don't typically they're not in the same, you know, they're not in the same room, so to speak. Baseball, same thing. You know, hockey, obviously there's quite literally a barrier between the crowd and the players. In basketball, you can have a player in your lap. Like, there's nothing abnormal about that. And, you know, whether it's Wayne Selden trying to save a ball against Baylor or Marcus Smart trying to block a shot against Texas Tech, you can, at any point, if you're sitting on the first row, quite literally have a player in your lap. So there is no barrier there. And to me, that's what makes this a little more awkward, because the people you are yelling at, you know, can touch you, and you can touch them. And well, oftentimes, you're separated by less than a foot.
I think that's part of it, is that the fans think they can yell without any repercussions. They think the player can't hit them, which, you know, they can't. But you know, they're free to say whatever they want. I mean, they're sitting at home, if they're watching the game, they're probably yelling the same stuff, and that's just going to carry over to when they're at the game, because they still think they're untouchable. They think that the player can't respond to them. Nobody's going to hit them. You know, if they do, there's going to be, you know, punishment for the other guy. So they're just saying it because literally, you know, there's really nothing that's going to happen to them, whether physically, whether somebody yelling back at them. It's just not going to happen. And I think that fans, they're going to do it at home, and they're just going to carry over when they buy tickets to the game.
The problem with this opinion, of course, the opinion I have is that, okay, where is the line then? Okay, Parrish, are you telling us you can't boo the other team because it's disrespectful?
You know it when you hear it.
I think that's true. I think that's it. I think you know it when you hear it, you know? And, you know, because, like, listen, you know, I saw some people tweet earlier today, you know, 42 was on HBO last night. And it, you know, and if you've ever seen that movie, you know that it's not new that people would be yelling ridiculous things at athletes. But, you know, I guess, you know, like, where is the line drawn? Like, can you, you know, there's all sorts of wild stuff yelled at Rick Pitino. There's all sorts of wild stuff yelled at Larry Eustace. I heard people make jokes, like, with my own ears while Larry Eustace was coaching Southern Miss, about alcoholism, which I thought was like over the line, you know, and I actually talked to Larry about this one time. He said, you know, it's just weird to me because, like, that is a disease. You know what, you know, you can laugh at my pictures. I'm paraphrasing Larry, but this is essentially what he said. You can laugh at the pictures of me in natural light, and you can laugh at the pictures of girls kissing me on the cheek and all of that stuff, right? Like, laugh it up. I got it, right? But ultimately, I have a disease. You know, alcoholism is a disease. And if I were bald coaching my basketball team because I'd gone through chemotherapy, you wouldn't be making cancer jokes about me. Everybody would understand that that's wrong, that that's inappropriate. But for some reason, it was okay for people to, and mostly students, to make jokes about alcoholism. And to me, that was always, I don't know. It just didn't sit well with me. And you guys know me pretty well. Like, I'm not offended by much, you know, or anything really. And so I recognize this might sound weird coming from me, but I have been in arenas where I hear things and I go, what, why do, why does that person think it's okay? And I guess maybe if I were trying to draw the line, it would be, you know, when it is said or yelled, more likely, in a situation where it seems very direct, where you're close to another person, in this context, a player, and what you're saying isn't from a distance at the court. It's actually from close range into somebody's face. And that's what we seem to have had the other night at Texas Tech.
I think that's the biggest thing, is the proximity of the two people. I mean, if Marcus Morris was at half court and Jeff Ward yelled, "You're a piece of crap," from 50 yards away,
right?
You know, nobody would say anything. But he's literally, you know, 8 inches, 1 foot from him. If you get called a piece of crap and get pointed at, you know, you're going to respond. It's hard not to. It's hard not to hear it. And I think that when, you know, that's kind of crossing the line, is when somebody's right in front of you like that and they're taking the insult directly and they can hear it and everything like that. I think that's where the line was crossed.
Hey, what about two national writers have actually turned this toward, you know, it was Dane O'Neill at ESPN and Mike DeCourcy at Sporting News. They've turned this toward Ford and kind of placed a lot of the blame on him for not being a better coach for Smart, a better teacher overall. Do we agree with that in any sort of sense, that this could have been prevented if Travis Ford had basically been a better mentor for Marcus Smart?
I don't know. I mean, here's what I would say. First off, I'll be honest with you. You know, like, I was at the Memphis Gonzaga game on Saturday night. I was actually interviewing Joe Jackson when this went down. And so I was getting ready to write a column about Joe Jackson's block and Nick King's emergence and all this type of stuff. And then I get back to my computer and I recognize that this had happened, and our bosses and I collectively, and I think wisely, just said, okay, bag that. Nobody cares. You know, first off, it's already 11 o'clock at night. You're not, you know, it's at midnight Eastern. Nobody's going to care about the Memphis Gonzaga game tomorrow morning. Nobody's awake this late. By tomorrow, when we wake up, it's all Marcus Smart. Bag that column and write about Marcus Smart. So I did that. And then, you know, on Sunday, because this is such a big story again and they're going to hold a press conference, you're writing another column. And I guess my point is, you run out of things to say pretty quickly. You know, like, okay, like, I felt almost Saturday night, there are things I wanted to say in a different way, and there are things I wanted to say a little more clearly and definitively. But I had essentially, between Twitter and the initial column and various radio interviews, I had said everything I needed to say. So I think by the time you're writing again on Sunday night and you've already read 100 columns between Saturday night and Sunday night, and you don't want to repeat or regurgitate what somebody else has already written, you start looking for new angles. And so you stumble into Travis Ford's at fault here. And so I think that's what happens on some level. But I would say this. I got no issue with what Travis did Saturday night, really, because – like, as he pointed out in the press conference yesterday, you know, I was still trying to figure out how to win the game. You know, I think that's a pretty natural thing for a coach. I mean, you see guys foul with 45 seconds left all the time when they're down by 11. Why? Because they're just still trying to figure out a way to win the game. These guys are desperate. You know, they make a lot of money, they got a lot of pressure, and they're holding on to any hope. So, though that game is over in my eyes, and that game's over in your eyes, and that game's over in everybody else's eyes, to Travis Ford, I can see how he's trying, genuinely just so focused on trying to figure out how to win the game that it's not an issue. But I have, all of that said, I have thought this for a while. You know, Marcus Smart, like, famously, and this was presented in a pretty positive way, an entirely positive way, you know, like, was doing scouting reports for Oklahoma State and is considered the leader of that team and the, quote, coach on the floor. And I think he's been given a lot of leeway to act however he's wanted to act. And nobody seems either willing or capable to rein him in. What was once perceived as a great competitive edge quickly turned into a short temper. What was great once perceived with Marcus Smart as, wow, man, he's out there battling and fighting for his teammates, suddenly got turned into, why is he bitching all of the time? Like, why is he constantly, you know, talking with refs and complaining to refs? And it seems like at some point over the past couple of weeks, as the opinions on Marcus have started to turn a little bit, that somebody would have and I guess it would be Travis, would have set him down and said, listen, this is turning on you. Like, everything you used to do that you're now doing is now being perceived in a different way. You can't be kicking chairs. You can't be walking away from your teammates. You can't be complaining with refs. You can't be flopping and then complaining. And so if there is a failure on Travis's part, I think it's in letting this build to this moment on Saturday night more so than it is what actually happened on Saturday night. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And yeah, it was kind of tracking and trending toward this. And ultimately, I think it's actually going to be a good thing because, in an unintended way. But because Marcus Smart can come back from this. You know, this isn't going to taint his reputation forever.
Of course not.
He's young, talented, mature, intelligent. And, you know, even our Matt Moore at CBSSports.com, he tweeted on Sunday night that he had talked to some NBA exec-y, and I'm quoting him there, type people who said this likely won't hurt his draft stock at all. So while it's a massive story in the short term, ultimately, you know what, we probably will faintly remember this 10 years from now, but I have a pretty good inclination to say that this is certainly going to be a footnote, if that, on his career when it's all said and done.
Oh, I would say we'll never forget it. I mean, this will always be, like, it's never going to go away, right? But these things can be perceived, if he goes on and if he comes back, handles himself properly the rest of the season, which I suspect that he will, and Oklahoma State starts winning, this will be considered the turning point where everybody rallied around their leader and blah, 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 right? This is the, like, I heard somebody on radio this morning say, this is going to affect his draft stock big time. That was the quote, big time. Well, no, it's not, all right? Like, no, it's not. The fact that he can't make a jumper is going to affect his draft stock. Right. You know, somewhat, but he's never slipping out of the top 10, no matter what. All right. So, I just don't think it'll affect him in any real way going forward. Although, like, you know, National Player of the Year, Big 12 Player of the Year, that kind of stuff is probably off the table now, but he's a top 10 pick tomorrow. He's a top 10 pick, in June. What do we make though of both of you on to some degree have said, you know, hey, listen, you know, if somebody yells something like that at you, you know, from close range, you're going to respond. And I guess the only thing I would say is you're not necessarily going to respond. Like, you know, I might understand why you respond, but I don't think I would respond that way. And maybe it's just because I'm a wimp, right? Maybe I would look up and go, oh, whoa, this is a big dude. I'm not pushing him, so maybe that's why I wouldn't respond. But I don't think I would respond in that way. Of course, I'm not 19 years old either. But I have had some people, and let's just talk about it. You know, after, you know, from Saturday night to Sunday morning, you know, there's a huge vacuum there, and it's going to be filled with something. And it was filled with people speculating on what was said to Marcus Smart, and there was allegations that Jeff Orr used the N-word or some sort of racial slur that he said, maybe even, quote, go back to Africa. Now, Jeff Orr has, denied using any sort of racial slur. And given that Travis Ford, Marcus Smart, and both had an opportunity yesterday to say otherwise, and they didn't, then I am of the belief that he didn't use a racial slur. You know, at this point, Jeff Orr has come out publicly and said, I did not. And nobody's come out publicly and said, yes, he did. So I think it's only fair to take him at his word. And yet people still say, well, come on, Parrish. You think if he just was called a piece of crap, Marcus Smart would have jumped up like that? Well, I saw him kick the hell out of a chair, you know, a couple weeks ago, and the chair quite clearly said nothing. So are we all in agreement here that the fact that Marcus pushed Jeff Orr doesn't necessarily mean that anything was said outside of piece of crap? And I'm not trying to rationalize piece of crap. That's still something that shouldn't be said. But contrary to what some folks have tried to suggest on Twitter, there is a gap between calling somebody a piece of crap and the N-word, between calling somebody a piece of crap and saying, go back to Africa. Like, they're both wrong, but there's certain degrees of wrong. And go back to Africa is way more offensive than you piece of crap, I think, isn't it?
Well, I think, you know, we could be just, you know, maybe Orr said something, Smart heard something completely different. And then now after he had time to, you know, sit down and think about it, he realized that maybe he didn't say, maybe Orr didn't say what Smart thought he said.
Well, let me stop you real quick. I think that's interesting because I was talking with one of our bosses last night and we don't know what Marcus Smart heard.
Right.
Like Jeff Orr might not have said that, but you get into a pretty slippery area trying to insist what it is someone else heard or not heard. So I'm not interested in calling Marcus Smart a liar, that he fabricated some story. A lot of people are doing that on Twitter, by the way. Oh, you know, why is it Marcus Smart
if you look at Smart when he was walking away, he said, you know, it looked like he said, watch your mouth. It looked like he said, you heard what he said.
Yeah.
You know, if he had just heard piece of crap, he wouldn't have been saying, watch your mouth. You heard what he said, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that that's true. He might have just heard piece of crap and said, watch your mouth. You know, he might have been so frustrated and then you just snap and then you have to.
But the woman next to him, the one that was pointing at Smart after he pushed, you know, you could see her saying he didn't say anything that bad.
Right.
I
don't know what the woman considers bad. And I don't know what her life is.
Yeah, what people consider bad is like that's hard to figure out.
I think there could be a thing, you know, a difference between what Orr said and what Smart thought he heard. So
that's my point. So I guess I'm not interested in calling Jeff Orr a liar because Marcus Smart did not call Jeff Orr a liar, and he would be the one who, if anybody could, it would be him. But I'm also not considered I've got a tweet from a guy. He says, why are we not crucifying Marcus Smart for making up that a man used a racial slur when he didn't? Well, because I'm not sure that he did. I'm not sure that he made that up. Again, what really happened and what Marcus Smart thinks happened could be two totally different things. And it also doesn't guarantee that Marcus Smart is lying. So perfect audio and video of the incident from 12 different angles. I'm in no position to call Marcus Smart a liar any more than I'm in a position to call Jeff Orr a liar. You know, I mean, that's fair, right?
Smart would have had to have that lie prepared like the second he pushed the guy. I mean, to me, like he would have had to create that lie in that split second right after he pushed the guy. And I don't think he was thinking about, you know, how can I make this seem like it's okay to push the guy? To me, you can't really, I mean, without knowing what Smart really thought he heard, you can't call him a liar to me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Well, listen, there was some actual basketball played over the weekend. You wouldn't know that by the first 30 minutes of this podcast. But completely overshadowed, and oddly, someone in the same league as Marcus Smart was Melvin Edgem, who, you know, got 48 points, 18 rebounds in Iowa State's win over TCU. We've spent so much time this season talking about Marcus Smart and Andrew Wiggins and Joel Embiid and even DeAndre Kane, Edgem's teammate at Iowa State. At this moment, and I don't want us to be reacting strictly to what we just saw over the weekend, right? Because that's that'll get you in a lot of trouble. But at this moment, given this season, you know, through February 10th, is it reasonable to say Melvin Edgem, given that Iowa State's sitting here with only four losses and half of them are to Kansas, is it reasonable to say he should be the Big 12 Player of the Year? If not him, who? Because his numbers are better than everybody else's.
DeAndre Kane.
I mean,
DeAndre Kane could be an option.
I still think you could go Andrew Wiggins if you wanted to.
I'm saying Iowa State's going to finish right now. I guess they're fourth or fifth. And, you know, I don't know if a player there would come from that. So I think, you know, you might have to end up with somebody from Kansas.
I would take Kane just over Edgem. By the way, this is why I really like Iowa State, just as a kind of a sleeper. Yeah, exactly. I mean, just because, and then like Niang had a great game earlier in the week. So they really have that power trio a guy that can really hurt you depending on the night. And earlier in the season, I mean, they've had, what, five or six players that have actually been Big 12 Player of the Week. So
yes,
they've consistently been this dangerous. They've just been a little erratic and kind of had that dip, which most teams obviously face. But if they're able to get through February, by the way, and Edgem is able to continue to do this, you know, him being that vital senior, that'll prove to be valuable in terms of making the push in February, getting a strong seed. And Iowa State will be a team that more people will take seriously as a Final Four contender. But I guess I would go Kane slightly above Edgem on Iowa State, and I guess I'd go Wiggins, which is crazy, because I still don't, I would not have Wiggins as a, I guess I can't do that. I guess I would go Kane, because I would have Kane ahead of Wiggins player of the year wise right now.
You're really waffling right now, bro.
Yeah, I know you're arguing with yourself, Norlander.
I'm pulling a Paris right now. I'm arguing with myself.
What? I never argue. I'm pretty definitive in what I say.
All right. Well, you talk it out. That's what I'm saying.
I talk through it. No, that is true. Yeah. I tend to talk through. Yeah. Yesterday, Tony Moss, one of our bosses, called, and after the press conference, the Marcus Smart press, and he was like, "So what are you going to write?" And I start talking, and I'm like, "Well, you know, I don't know," and blah, blah, blah. And then I'm saying like, "Here's what I think about this," but then again, blah, blah, blah. And like for 15 minutes, I was just like, I finally had to stop myself. I said, "Listen, just listen to me." I'm telling Tony, like, just listen. Like, I'm talking this through as I'm talking to you. And I'll, by the end of this conversation, I'll have the column figured out. I hope it's you know. Iowa State, I guess, is fourth in the Big 12 standings. I didn't even recognize that. People would point it out to me every once in a while on Twitter. I never look at – do you guys look at league standings
never.
Ever?
The only ones I look at is, like, the never. Mid-major ones, like Atlanta, you know, like the small conference. I look at those. I don't look at
– I never look at
them. I don't know what place Pittsburgh is in the ACC.
I have no idea. I never look at league standings. And I guess it's because, you know, I look at everything in terms of entire bodies of work and how the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee might look at it. But, you know, when people say, yeah, but could the player of the year come from a team that's fourth in the Big 12? I didn't even know Iowa State was fourth in the Big 12. Here's what I knew about Iowa State. They have 6 top 50 wins, including wins over Michigan and Iowa. And they only have 4 losses, none outside of the top 30 of the RPI. And half of those losses are to Kansas. So when I look at Iowa State, I see a team with a top 10 resume in the country. I don't see a team that's fourth in the Big 12.
That's pretty much what I see too. And
I mean, I kind of hope they're like a 5 seed, just because it's a cooler.
There are no way you can't look at this.
I'm saying I wish they were. They're going to be like a 3 or 4, but I wish they were like a 5. It'd be a better Final Four sleeper. Is all I'm saying.
So
I just wanted to be.
You're trying to set them up to be your sleeper.
I wanted to fit my narrative for Selection Sunday. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll put in a phone call to a source at the NCAA, see if I can get them underseeded, so that you can have a good sleeper for Selection Sunday. This week, looking ahead a little bit, top-ranked Syracuse is going to be at Pitt on Wednesday. I know this is going to surprise some people, but Syracuse might actually be an underdog in this game. I realize Syracuse is going for a perfect season, but Pitt, I think, probably needs this more, and I think I'm going to write about this for tomorrow. Like, listen, Pitt's going to be in the NCAA tournament. That's not an issue. They're a good basketball team. I don't think really anybody disputes that. But they have taken a lot of, criticism, for never beating a good team. Is it possible that even though Syracuse is ranked number one and going for a perfect seat regular season, is it possible Jamie Dixon's team needs this more than Jim Boeheim's team?
I think so. And like, I had this kind of game circled as where, you know, Syracuse might lose, and Pittsburgh's struggles have kind of, made it seem not as attractive an option. But Jamie Dixon, he's always played well against the 2-3 zone. You know, he's played against it for years, coached against it for years. And Pittsburgh, to me, you know, you mentioned that they're in a lock for the NCAA tournament. If they go 0-2 this week against Syracuse and UNC, you know, I think they're heading toward the bubble, just because there's not that many chances for them to prove they can beat NCAA tournament teams. They have one top 50 win right now, and that's over Stanford. So that could become, you know, not even a top 50 win by the end of the year. So I think they're kind of desperate for a marquee win, and beating Syracuse obviously would cover that.
This would be vital. I mean, they really should have lost over the weekend at home. They somehow were able to escape in double overtime, West Pittsburgh, against Virginia Tech. If they don't get this one, they're still going to have what, road chances at Boston College, Notre Dame, and Clemson. Clemson is, you know, borderline NCAA tournament team at this
point.
If
you don't get this,
this is
when
the last one.
If
right?
you, yeah, this is it. Like, if you don't this get this, I mean, unless you want to, you know, brag about a road win at Carolina, and I guess that's worth bragging about. I you know, according to KenPom, they're more likely, and this is the type of stuff that blows people's minds. That according to KenPom, they're more likely to beat Syracuse at home on Wednesday than they are to win at North Carolina on Saturday, right? Like, I saw one yesterday. Who was it? What was the Michigan State, Wisconsin? I guess that's what it was, right? And somebody was like, oh, Wisconsin upsets Michigan State. No, Michigan State was like a 4-point underdog in that game, you know? So
playing without two starters.
Yeah, yeah. But so this statement would probably be surprising to at least some people listening. Pitt is more likely to beat Syracuse Wednesday than they are to beat North Carolina on Saturday. But I don't know how much that North Carolina, I don't know that everything's perceived that way by the selection committee. So if you don't, let's just say get one this week. If you lose to Syracuse and lose at North Carolina, where are you going to get quality wins? Like, you can now you're waiting on the ACC tournament. Like, that now you're reduced to having to get work done in the ACC tournament. So I don't know that anybody in the country has a bigger week ahead of them than
They'd be a fascinating case because they obviously rack up the wins. I think ultimately if they lost Syracuse and North Carolina and then they won every other game, they'd have like 25 wins or whatever. They'd be 25-7 or whatnot. They'd get in, but
they're still probably gonna get in seed. But it's going to be like, it's going to be like a double digit, like 10 seed. Just
they're going to be, one of Borzella's super sleepers.
Sleeper on selection Sunday. But, you know, there's something to be said, and we don't have to hammer this home again, for never losing to bad teams. Like,
Totally.
They have no losses outside of the top 20 of the RPI. So I'm not telling you the resume is great, but there's a precedent set for teams not getting in the NCAA tournament as at-large bids with very few quality wins. And so I don't know that Pitt needs, if Pitt does nothing more than lose the games it's supposed to lose and win the games it's supposed to win going forward, they'll be in the NCAA tournament. But if you want to change the national narrative about yourself, to the extent that there's a national narrative about Pitt, you got to beat somebody. And so this is a big week for them.
I think if they blew out both Miami and Virginia Tech, we wouldn't even be talking about this. I think, you know, having two close wins against bad teams has kind of highlighted the fact that, you know, is Pitt really that good? To me, if they had won each game by 15 points, we're not even talking about this, even though they would have the same exact resume.
Real quick, though, like, I think they're going to beat Syracuse. Do you guys agree or no?
I'll agree with that.
I actually think that is, I think that's the place where Syracuse...
Dixon seems to have that 2-3 zone offense down pat. You know, they only lost by 5 at the Carrier Dome. He's had a good record against Boeheim in the past. I think it's a desperation win for them.
Yep. So also on Wednesday night, this is wild. Yesterday I was looking at sort of the schedule for this week, and you know, because you know, in what we do, it gets very difficult sometimes to look too far ahead. So I was like, okay, who is playing like this week midweek? Like, Kansas State's tonight. That'll be good. And then I knew Pitt and Syracuse are Wednesday, just because I've known that for a long time. And then I looked up and realized the first Duke Carolina game of the season is Wednesday night. Did you guys realize that? Like, nobody.
I saw Duke Carolina tweeted about it last night, but I had no clue.
The Duke Carolina game is so far off the radar right now, and it's obviously Carolina's fault, you know. But usually that's like the biggest game of the week
game,
in whatever week that game happens, and in this particular week it won't even be the biggest game of that night, will it? I mean, no, it won't. It won't even be the biggest game that night.
No, that's wow. Yeah, that really one that really snuck up on us. By the way, Carolina, give them credit. They're rolling as of late.
You can't make fun of them anymore. It's not as
nice. I know they and to the extent there's a national narrative about Carolina, they've ruined that. But they've won 5 in a row. Granted, none of those wins are exceedingly impressive. I mean, the best one I guess is at Notre Dame, which they got on Saturday. But beating Duke would go a long way. If they beat Duke, which they very much can, it's a home game for Carolina. They are going to be in a position where you'd think they're going to lose one or two at least before the season's out, but their wins are going to be so good at the top that they could honestly get a 5 or a 6, and it's going to look weird if they kind of still stumble, because no one else is going to have, guys, no one's going to have anything close to that in that range. Nope. Like, we talked about this last week on the podcast, the 4 to 8 seed range in general is just, everything is smushed together because those teams don't have really good wins. Well, Carolina has wins that are so much better than the rest of the group that even though they've got a few bad losses, and yes, that will appropriately ding them to a certain extent, I really think that those Kentucky, Louisville, Michigan State wins are going to enhance their profile so much. You tack on a Duke win and as well, or if they beat Pittsburgh, again, not a great one, but still very solid, then they're cruising to a pretty good spot without P.J. Harrison, and to a better spot than I think most of us thought they could have been at.
Yeah, that's why I always thought it was silly when folks were like, oh, Carolina's going to miss the tournament. When you have, you know, before mid-December, you know, already a Louisville, Michigan State, and Kentucky win in your back pocket. Like, I said this in mid-December. Like, if they just stopped right there, if they didn't get another, quote, quality win all year long, like, through mid-January, through mid-February, through mid-March, they would still have more on Selection Sunday than the bubble teams. You know, yep. like they did so much work. Like, those quality wins, you guys know. I sometimes don't know if everybody grasps how important it is to have quality wins on Selection Sunday. Top 25 wins, top 50 wins. That the idea that they already had a Louisville, Michigan State, and Kentucky win by December 14th was always going to, it's not even all things being equal, it's all things being kind of close. They were going to be able to overwhelm other bubble candidates with those quality wins. So, yeah, this five-game winning streak has got them back in, I think, contention for the top 25. But they were really going to have to just fall apart in a way that they still weren't falling apart for them to ever be on the wrong side of the bubble.
Yeah, I think they have to go 500 in the ACC.
Yeah.
If they do that, that's fine. I mean, if they went like...
Actually, I think they can do it with less than 500.
Well, if they
went
8-10, I think they would put them in like 18 and 13 heading into the ACC tournament, and then a loss there would be 14 losses. That could be tough.
Are we okay with Wisconsin now?
I
or was that just a win over a bet?
Home, like, I guess, yeah, for the most part. I mean, you make the good case in today's post on the top 25 and one in terms of they're what, top 25 or top 30 wins?
Top 25. They got five top 25
only them
wins.
Only them in Kansas.
That's it.
Can claim five top 25 wins. We'll note, obviously, Michigan State was not at full strength. But,
sure,
you know, if you watch the game, Wisconsin played really well, and Michigan State played really well as well. I'm pretty good with Wisconsin overall, you know, and, you know, yes, okay, I'm wavering again. I'm talking myself through this, but yes, I am.
And Borzello, you getting ready to make a trip to Rupp Arena? Will this be your first trip to Rupp Arena?
I went there for Midnight Madness. Oh, yeah. I have not been there for a game. I got a nice little trip, though. I got Cincinnati on Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Then I got Florida, Kentucky, 9 p.m. Then I got Louisville on Sunday.
Are you ready to overanalyze the John Calipari's Wildcats?
Oh yeah, I mean that's what I'm hoping that they're not a top 25 team.
What? What?
I'm kidding.
What?
Yeah. Borzello rooting against the Wildcats.
No. Yeah.
Is that your opinion or is that your hope?
Yeah, that's all I was saying. I don't.
I love that John brought that back. I hadn't heard that one in like 12 years. So I was. He used to have like 8.
That's like his go-to saying.
That's a deep cut from one of his early.
That's like a B-side. from one of his early albums. It had been a long time. He's actually brought out a lot of. He has like eight sayings, and he just uses them wherever, and he never really trades them in. He puts them on a shelf. Like, parks him in the garage for a little while, and then he'll bring them back out. He brought out pooping ice cream.
He used that with like Cousins and Wall back in a couple years ago.
Well, now he has different ways of using it. He used to be, you are the poop in the ice cream, like you're the poop in our ice cream. We have ice cream. You're the poop in it, and so we can all be ice cream. But if you're poop in our ice cream, then what do we got? We got pooped ice cream. That's what we are. Right? Okay, so that was one way. And then at some point, that evolved into people have been telling my McDonald's All-Americans their whole lives that they poop ice cream. So he's got actually two different ways.
Okay. He's crafty like that.
Yeah, he's crafty like that. He can mix it up. He can call you poop in the team's ice cream, Or he can explain that the reason you can be sometimes difficult to coach is that, not that you're a bad guy, that you have forever been told that you poop ice cream. So you could use that. But the whole, is that your hope or is that your opinion? That had been that had been off the radar for about a decade, I guess. It was really nice to hear that.
I think they're going to beat Florida. And everyone's going to write that they've turned the corner. Like, I think we've done it like four times this year.
So. Well, it's so funny. Like, I've always thought this team was good. I just thought I've wavered on how good they are or what's possible for them. But I've forever said that I think they're a good basketball team. I think at some point
I still think they can make the Final Four.
You know, when after the LSU loss, they did at that moment. Now I know North Carolina has moved back into the top 50, so so that's not a loss outside of the top 50 anymore. But on the morning after the LSU loss, they had four losses outside of the top 50, which is twice as many as any other top 25 team. Like, literally twice as many as anybody else. So there's 25 teams in the top 25. 24 of them had two or fewer losses outside of the top 50. One of them, Kentucky, had four. And so I think at that point you have to look at them and go, look, do they really belong in a top 25, considering they now have four losses outside of the top 50? But that number has now shrunk to three. And either way, like, you know, whether you rank them 25 or 32 or 17, the talent's there, and they've got a guy who, I don't know if he'll end up in the Hall of Fame, but has Hall of Fame credentials, you know. So when you got a Hall of Fame coach and a bunch of draft picks, you're always just a snap of the fingers from, quote, turning the corner, and I won't be surprised in the least. In fact, I think I might predict them to beat Florida on Saturday. It's a good basketball team. I don't know that they're what we thought they were going to be, but that's a little bit like talking about Andrew Wiggins. Like, you know, Andrew Wiggins has been really, really good. Is he what some people thought he would be? No, but that doesn't mean he's not really, really good. I would think you could draw some pretty clear parallels between Andrew Wiggins' season and Kentucky season, if that makes sense, you know?
Yep. Yeah, no, it does, and it kind of speaks to, you know, the preseason chatter around Wiggins and around Kentucky. I would say Wiggins has matched that a little bit better than Kentucky, but, you know, given the age of the Wildcats and what they have, you know, done or not done, I guess that's maybe not totally surprising. But, yeah, I think they're going to beat – they better beat Florida, by the way. If they don't, oh, boy. I mean, yeah, they should, right? That's a home game.
That's my hope.
That is your hope. That's all right, good deal. Yeah, that's gonna be a nice little weekend trip for you there, buddy.
All right, well, get the packing, Borzello, and let me tell everybody,
6 days in advance.
Yes. I usually pack 6 minutes before I have to go to the airport. Thank you everybody for being here, for listening to the podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to the Iron College Basketball Pod over on iTunes. It's the quickest way you get that, and it is actually the way I get it every single Monday or Thursday when I record these things. Before it's ever in the blog, it is on iTunes. Not that I'm just walking around listening to my own podcast.
You might be doing that. Actually.
That would be weird. But anyway, you can do it if you want to. Go subscribe over to iTunes, and I'll talk to you a little later on this week. Take care.